This is a CBC podcast.
It's been a tense week at the Saskatchewan Legislature.
I ask the Government House to stand and withdraw and apologize for that comment, too. I'm not deaf.
I'm not.
Absolutely. Give her.
And with that, Government House Leader and Cabinet Minister Jeremy Harrison left the chamber. The Speaker refused to let him back in until the next day. And that isn't even the biggest news in Saskatchewan politics this week. Teachers will vote on the latest contract offer from government after months of impasse. Joining me now is our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan. Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, what is the latest with teachers?
Well, there's a development after weeks we've been talking about basically things being at a standstill. So there's going to be a vote in a few weeks. Teachers will vote on this, what the government's calling a tentative agreement. The teachers are not calling it that. They're saying this is a final offer. So a bit of a semantical debate here from both sides. Interesting hearing Jeremy Cockerell yesterday, who wouldn't speculate on what happens if the teachers vote this down. He's saying he's hopeful that the teachers will see their offer as fair. Samantha Beacott, very neutral, circumspect, I think, in her news conference, saying that we're going to take this to the teachers, let them decide, that this wasn't necessarily bargaining, as Jeremy Cockerell said. This is 2 days of bargaining. Samantha Beacott not really putting that bow on it, saying that this is kind of the offer we were given. And the other thing I thought that was interesting in her comments was her saying that, you know, nothing in this process as far as the vote or something that will come out of the process, I'm paraphrasing, will address directly class size and complexity. And that's the big sticking point, as we know. And that's a lot of the reaction we're seeing from teachers that I'm seeing is, you know, what's in the contract for this? There is the little bit about the MOU and the teachers wanting some of that money to be all the money to be binding under classroom size and complexity. That language isn't necessarily in there. The government saying they're going to honor the money that they've put into this and have school boards and school and teachers discuss that. And Jeremy Cockerell saying yesterday that the teachers are best placed also to have those discussions and that they should have a role in those discussions, but not putting it, you know, specifically in the contract the way the teachers have been asking for it. So still a lot of long ways to go with this.
So what do you make of this?
Two key points. Went to my Labour Dictionary of Terms, and tentative deal and final offer are not the same words.
Thank
they're,
you.
They're something totally different. And that's all the difference in the world in my mind. The other all the difference in the world thing is there is no recommendation from the bargaining unit, from the leadership, that they ratify this deal, that this is as good as it gets. In essence, what the union is saying is we're taking this to the membership because you want us to take it to the membership, and we'll decide from there. Now, still might get voted through. Who knows? Because teachers are like everybody else in this province, a little tired of this, want to get back to normalcy. They want their kids to enjoy graduation and everything else. And maybe they don't really see an end goal or an end product to these months and months of negotiation. To this day, Anna and I were just talking about how we still don't really know what classroom size and complexity means, because it means different things to every classroom in the province. So it's obviously difficult to define. That would have been a better argument for the government, that we can't really define it in the contract, and that maybe that we need another mechanism in order to do that, and we can't be bound to that because we don't know what it means. But that hasn't been the argument. The argument we've heard from Jeremy Cockerell is a lot of silly stuff. And we heard more silly stuff in terms of him basically saying that this is a tentative deal. Not by a long shot. It might not be. Now, I guess we'll see in 3 weeks in terms of whether the teachers think they can get anything more out of this, even whether they think they get more money of it, because the 8% that they're basically getting over 3 years is significantly less than the initial ask that added up to the 23% with the COLA, cost of living allowance riser, that was included. So I guess we'll see pretty soon, but I think this one's far from over.
Okay. We've also heard the opposition continue to press the government on its spending at a couple of Regina motels. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, there's new figures. I'll just say that we've been talking about this for a few months. Gary Graywall, the MLA for Regina Northeast for the SAS party, who's not running for re-election, is a part owner and owner in the Sunrise Motel and the Thrift Lodge. We've got into the Sunrise Motel. We know that that was a place that was charging inflated rates based on what the going rate, what you and I could pay to go stay there to social services and to the government. And what came out this week and what Meera Conway from the NDP has been pressing Jean Mikowski, the minister, on is before Gary Graywall was elected, there was about $1,300 spent on these two hotels combined, zero at the Thrift Lodge. And since then, $730,000. And the bigger, to make a finer point, the opposition is saying that not only is this a big chunk of change, they're spending more than you would have to spend if you were going to show up there for a night. That it's, you know, $80 a night, and roughly they're spending double to stay at these places. And so why is that? Why is the government spending more money? Why don't they care more to find out about this? The minister's saying that I don't choose the hotels. I'm not involved in this at all, that this is something social services decides, and that we're finding people that are desperate for housing in a desperate situation the best thing we can, and sometimes we have to pay over and above that. The opposition's not having that, and they think that there's more to this, and that's sort of where some of the personal attack stuff comes in, and that's what initially led to Donna Harpower's text that got under the skin of the speaker and has caught so much of a kerfuffle this week.
It's pretty stark, $1,300 before the election of this MLA, and nearly $750,000 afterward. What do you make of it?
Well, two things, one of which is the way it came out, like dribs, drabs, drip, 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 as I think I wrote in my column. You know, I hate that noise in my ear all the time. Pretty soon, I'm trying to fix it, and pretty soon I'm calling in a plumber because I've just basically tore apart my bathroom, but I digress. The fact of the matter is that we haven't heard from Mr. Graywall since the very beginning. I think Minister Mikowski's explanations are honest. I think he probably didn't know, and I think social services has been honest. I'm sure they don't know which hotel that they're sending people to. But did a MLA, who happens to be in the business, see an economic business advantage and basically decide at that particular point that he was going to get into the business of hosting social service clients because he could get away with charging significantly more? We don't know that yet. There's been never an explanation from Mr. Graywall as to why his company's gone into this. Like, what made you do this? And when we asked him why is it right to charge this, he says, well, there's often damage deposits done and sometimes it's hard to collect damage deposits, I suppose. But we've never had an explanation since that day. And obviously, the costs, as you've noted, have risen quite significantly. I think this is a big problem for government in terms of a conflict of interest at this particular point, because we're now dealing with a sizable sum of money that went to an active MLA who perhaps saw an opportunity to take advantage of the situation and did so. But we don't know that because we just haven't really heard from the explanation from government is no, he didn't, and they didn't do anything wrong, and I believe that. But I think there's still problems in terms of that we need to hear from Mr. Graywall, which we probably won't because he doesn't come out and he's not running again.
Right. And you mentioned some of the bad feelings in the legislature about these allegations and others about Kevin Doherty and the contract that didn't go to RFP when it comes to surgeries in Calgary, and the speaker who called out his own colleagues in a major way over that. What's the latest, Adam?
Yeah, this was shocking, really, that we've seen the speaker increasingly not only kick people out because they won't apologize. It's happened to the leader of the opposition, fairly recently. Other MLAs have been kicked out, but the government house leader being kicked out, that's the clip we played off the top. That's very rare, obviously. And hearing the speaker pull out his phone and read a text from the finance minister, the deputy premier.
I've never seen anything like that, and I covered 20 years of that legislature.
And I think the thing that stands out to me and us and the reporters we've been talking about this is the hundreds and hundreds of texts that he's saying. And now, to be clear to the listeners, the opposition and the government and the speaker admit to getting texts from
so-and-so is not here today,
I'll be doing the job, or hey, we're going to raise this point of order, just a heads up. But this goes far beyond that, I think. It's from the speaker, what the speaker is saying, that he's saying in the the quote from the text is that, you know, the Minister of Finance saying this has turned into a joke. It's disappointing. This is the opposition's allowed to basically flame these people that are unelected and elected. You're allowing this. I'm paraphrasing some of that. But you get this. You get the point.
She was criticizing the job he was doing as Speaker.
And Meera Conway said it, and she was Deputy House Leader the day that we talked to her and she, from the NDP. And she said, look, we'll send texts. Hey, I'm like you said, I'm here filling in for this person. But she said, we never dream of sending something that would influence or try and intimidate the Speaker, that crosses the line and that's what the government did. Scott Moe didn't say that what Donna Harpower did was inappropriate or criticize it at all. And they share a desk. And he sits right in front of Jeremy Harrison. He just said that the Speaker's supposed to uphold decorum. He kicked out Jeremy Harrison. That's his job. You expect him to do it tomorrow. And I told my caucus to be careful what you're texting. And so that's what we got from the Premier on that.
Well, what do you make of this?
Arrogance, childishness. Same thing we've consistently seen from Jeremy Harrison ever since he's been in that position. It's spread to other people in government, and that's on Scott Moe. He is leader of this caucus and party and needs to take responsibility for the behavior of the people that he's promoted to these roles. Government House leader. I have never seen a Government House leader, and I don't think anybody else has, kicked out by the Speaker, who is in essence part of his own government caucus, because the majority elects the Speaker. The majority happens to be on government side. Now, they've tired of previous speakers, of Don Toth, of Mark Docherty, because they weren't tough enough on the opposition. And apparently this Speaker isn't tough enough on the opposition either, because he's virtually doing his job in that black neutral robe where he's basically trying to be fair to both sides. But obviously, if you're in SAS party government, can't have fairness. That wouldn't be right. Like, we need to have that particular advantage as if you're a little child thinking that the game's designed for you to win. This is not the way it is. And this is the problem. And Scott Moe doesn't get this. And that Scott Moe doesn't realize that this is a problem speaks so much to Scott Moe's character. In this particular example, where it's all about the partisanship, it's all about basically gaining the advantage and not fall, even if that means not following the rules. And then once again, whether it be the carbon tax or a few other things that he may or may not be right in terms of public opinion or in terms of doing the right thing. But nevertheless, if I don't like the game, I'll breach the rules and make up my own rules. And this is more of the same. We have MLAs sitting beside Harrison cheering him. When he's the Government House Leader getting kicked out, who the hell's ever heard of that? It's singularly the most childish and ridiculous and irresponsible thing I think I've seen in my time covering this, and that goes back a few years. I don't get why they don't see this as a problem. Under Brad Wall, if this happened, yeah, there would be consequences, and there should be consequences. I don't think Harrison should be allowed back in the House until he actually does apologize. I think if I was Scott Moe, I'd be looking for another Government House Leader. I shudder to think what the next House is like if Randy Weeks isn't a tough enough Speaker. So who are they going to appoint? Attila the Hun? Like, I mean, honestly, my God, like, I mean, what exactly are they trying to accomplish here? And what do they think the public is seeing here? They need to get out of their bubble, and Scott Moe needs to wake up and realize that he's not governing for the SAS party caucus. He's governing for an entire province.
Thanks, you guys.
Welcome.
You're welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.